on this first day of August 2011 in San Diego. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text number 17. 317. Yastvatma rutadeva syad Atma triptas jamanavaha Atmanyeva chasantushtas Tasya kayam navidyate Yastvatma rutadeva syad Atma triptas jamanavaha Atmanyeva chasantushtas Tasya karyam navidyate. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Purport. A person who is fully Krishna conscious, who is fully satisfied by his acts in Krishna consciousness, no longer has any duty to perform. Due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety within is instantly cleansed, an effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. By such clearing of consciousness, one becomes fully confident of his eternal position in relationship with the Supreme. His duty thus becomes self-illuminated by the grace of the Lord, and therefore he no longer has any obligations to the Vedic injunctions. Such a Krishna-conscious person is no longer interested in material activities and no longer takes pleasure in material arrangements like wine, women, and similar infatuations. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So here a contrast is being drawn between someone who is performing what Krishna calls here in text 16 a chakra. A chakra means a circle or a cycle. A cycle of sacrifice to Krishna or to the gods even, so that one can prosper in this world. In previous verses, he spoke about how the devotees, or those who are performing yajna, they are able to propitiate the higher powers and get rain. Rain produces the grains, and the grains, by grains we can eat. But where does the yajna come from? Yajna is born of prescribed duties. Prescribed in what sense? Prescribed in varnashram. Varnashram is a system that's really set up by Krishna originally for the smooth organization of society. There are four varnas and four ashrams. The varnas are the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, and the ashrams are the Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, and Vanaprastha and Sannyas. The varnas especially are meant for all the social and economic intercourse by which society goes on. According to our karma, according to what we say is our genes or our psychophysical nature, we fit into four rough categories, according to Krishna. There's the intellectuals, those who are take pleasure in philosophical pursuits, who are naturally drawn toward inquiry into philosophy or literature and things. This is there in every society. Ideally, in the Vedic culture, Brahmins are trained in the Vedas. It is said, janmana jayate shudra. By birth, no one knows anything. But if you're born into a Brahmin family and you're in that environment, then certain samskaras will be performed. And so it says, sanskarad bhave dvija, one becomes twice born. But only by studying the Vedas does one really become a vipra, right? Veda, what is it? Bhave dvija. Veda bhata bhave dvija. And then, but Brahma janatiti brahmana. An actual Brahman is one who knows Brahman, the Supreme. And from the Bhagavad Gita, from all the Vedic literature, it is clear that that Supreme Brahman is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So a real Brahman is a Vaishnav, a worshipper of Vishnu. One cannot be a genuine Vaishnav without developing these brahminical qualities. One can be have some of those brahminical qualities without being a Vaishnav, but if you are a genuine Vaishnav, those qualities will be there. What are some of them? Krishna mentions in the 18th chapter, Samo Damas Tapak Shaucham Chantar Arjavameva Cha Gana Vigyanam Astikyam Brahma Karma Sobhavajam. So this Brahma Karma Sobhavajam means by activity and by one's nature, one manifests these qualities. Control of the senses, control of the mind, natural drawn toward austerity, cleanliness, knowledge, realized knowledge, religiousness, asti. The nastis, nastika means those who say there is no God. But astika means one who's religious, who believes in God. The qualities of the kshatriyas, I know my heart, but what is a very influential, is tejas, natural power, controlling, charismatic, natural leader, never flinches from a fight, one is has a warrior mentality. Ishwara Bhava means a natural controller. Also dhriti is self-control. The kshatriyas are not simply goons. They're also practice many processes of self-control, and they accept the Brahmins as their guides, genuine kshatriyas. The Vaishyas are they produce the wealth in society, either agriculturally, through cow protection, through agriculture, through business, mercantile, like that. And so they're meant to give all kinds of charity, and they pay taxes to the kshatriyas, charity to the Brahmins. The Shudras, manual laborers, they serve the other society, the others in society. There's many of those. So these, you can see that people kind of fall into those rough categories, even in this world. But without the Vedic understanding and training, then these varnas become corrupted. The Brahmins no longer follow the Vedic literature. They become just intellectuals, selling their knowledge to the highest bidder, so to speak. The kshatriyas can become corrupt. That causes great disaster when the kings become corrupt in society, the rulers, or you get fascism or whatever. And so, of course, the vaishyas can become corrupt. We see it today. You have banking, finance. They're more than, who is it, FDR called them, the banksters. You know, they're really gangsters, but they control so much money in the bank. And then you have the manual laborers, and they can become obviously corrupt through without proper training. So these duties are given ideally according to one's nature and one's place in society. And if one performs them nicely according to the Vedic culture, then that will require jagya, or sacrifice, as appropriate for each station in life. And then society will prosper. So these are duties that are given. Now, duty is always given by a higher authority, right? If you have a duty to fight for your country, okay, I'll go enlist in the army, I'll accept the draft, I'll fight for greater good. Or in every job, a husband accepts a duty, okay, I have to go to work, support the family, so pay the rent, whatever. So these are things that one may not like to do, but he doesn't because there's a higher cause, there's a higher reason for it. If one doesn't accept this cycle of sacrifice and then prosperity given from above, then one is living simply for sense gratification, called Indriya Ramo. That's in text 16. And it's a sinful life. It's a life that in which one incurs sinful reactions because you're violating the laws of God and the laws of nature. And those sinful reactions eventually accumulate individually and socially, and it create chaos in society or in one's own life. We find so much suffering. So one lives uselessly if you simply live for sense gratification without any sacrifice, without any duty. But, and that's the verse we read today, that was by means of introduction. If one is satisfied in the self, now notice that that in this translation, there's a cap S on the self and also in the word by words. That indicates that one is satisfied and takes pleasure in Krishna consciousness, in serving God. And all of one's duties are kind of subsumed under that. There's a nice verse, often quoted, we've been quoting because it's pertinent to this chapter. Devarshi bhutapta nuinam patinam nakin karonayam hrini charajan. Savatmanayak sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam padirachakartam. So padirachakartam means he's given up the sense of duty because you've given up the sense of being an independent actor. If one who is completely surrendered, sarvatmanayak sharanam sharanyam, unto the one to whom one should take shelter, Mukunda, then with what? Sarvatmana, with one's body, mind, words, and soul, with everything that at your disposal, then you're no longer a debtor. You're no longer a debtor to the devas, to the rishis or great saints, to the people in general, to anyone. Because it's like watering the root of a tree, that all of the subordinate elements, the twigs, the branches, fruits and flowers, are satisfied by watering that root. So Krishna, or God, Achyuta, is the root of all existence. All the devas become satisfied if we serve Krishna. But it doesn't feel like a sacrifice after some time. It's a pleasure. That's why he says, Atma Roti. If one is taking pleasure in serving the self, then you've already gone beyond this sense of sacrifice. It's like we perform Sankirtan Jagya, right? This is the main sacrifice for the age. Congregational chanting of the holy name. That's recommended in the Shastra, that's Lord Chaitanya's teaching. Okay, so it's a sacrifice. You have to be there, you have to raise your voice. As I was explaining this morning, it's not so easy to chant for 3 hours. You may be walking along, but you know, if you're not chanting, you know, then you're not performing the sacrifice. So, but it's not a very difficult sacrifice, but it requires some energy and focus. But at a certain point, this is the wonderful thing about it, it's no longer a sacrifice. It's a pleasure, right? I mean, if you're chanting and dancing and enjoying a kirtan and dancing in front of Jagannath, as we did yesterday, where's the sacrifice? You know? Of course, after your 3 hours of chanting in the sun, your body feels that it's performed a sacrifice. But it's not. It's a pleasure. So, and we don't. It's not like we missed out on performing something else that we had to do. For the devotees, we feel we did the right thing. We spent 3 hours doing the best thing we could do for ourselves. You know. So that's exactly what Krishna says. Apna triptas tamana. That person who is satisfied in the self, the supreme self, Jagannath, the Lord of the universe, Krishna, satisfied serving, then santushtas tasya karyam na vidyate. There's no further duty to perform. It's not like, oh, God, I missed out on my duty. That is our duty. But is it really a duty when the duty becomes a pleasure? Just like Krishna, he takes the cows out every day. That's his job. That's the livelihood. Thousands of cows. You have to milk them and you have to take them out for grazing in the forest. But what happens when as soon as they leave the town? They're playing. They're herding and playing at the same time. It's not a job. It's not like a 9-to-5 job. You understand what I'm saying? So that's what's being mentioned here, that this is for the advanced souls who have learned how to take pleasure in serving the self, the supreme self, and you open up a channel to the highest pleasure there. It's not a job. It's not a sacrifice anymore. The sacrifice is when you're a conditioned soul and you need to chip away at that big mountain of false ego and false pride and false proprietorship. Okay, sacrifice a portion of your wealth for the service of Krishna. It's a sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice. But eventually, in Krishna consciousness, you realize that, oh, this is not much of a sacrifice at all. Just like in the 10th chapter, Krishna says, of all sacrifices, I am japa. Personal chanting of the holy name. Right? So, for many of us, it is a sacrifice. Okay, it's japa time. Stay awake, be awake, stay in the temple room, try to focus on the name. It is a sacrifice. But at a certain point, tunde tandavani ratim vatanate tundavali labdeye, Rupa Goswami says, oh, why only one mouth? Let me have 1,000 mouths. Not so I can perform more sacrifice. The whole verse is about, I do not know how much nectar these 2 syllables Krishna have produced. You see? So this is the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness, is that what begins as a sacrifice and austerity, right? Tapasya is another element, ends as spontaneous pleasure, devotional service. That's where we're headed. And it's important to realize that, you know, kind of as a meta look at our duty, you know, as devotees of Krishna, of course, some of you are fairly new to this process, but the larger, you know, mission that Krishna has for us, right? We have our individual desire to attain success in yoga, right? That has to be there, and oftentimes that impetus, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, comes under four categories: arto, jigyasa, or artarti. One is distressed. One is in search of knowledge. One may be in search of wealth, or just curious. Somehow or other, you come in contact with the process of yoga, and then, maybe this will solve my problems. You know, I'll get relief from distress. I may get some money. You know, find out about, you know, Brahman, whatever. You know, so that should serve as an impetus. We want the benefit of getting free from all the birth and death and all this suffering. That's a big part of the teaching here, to understand that this world is not a place for our pleasure. It's not a place where the soul, where the self, can really find happiness or security. It's just impossible. Because we're situated in this machine of the body, which by nature is destructible. You know, you live in this world for some time. You know, as children, it was a big shock to me when I first, you know, somebody I knew died. I think my grandmother, when I was maybe 12 or 13, whatever. Suddenly, you know, there was a person who I knew, I talked to, you know, we had exchanges, and they died, you know. And it's like, wow. You know, it's like that Buddha moment, you know, the story of Buddha. He was pampered in the palace, you know. His father didn't want him to see any negativity. No old people, you know, what to speak of dying, no disease. And he went outside the gates and he saw an old man about to expire under a tree. It was a huge shock. So he realized that life is not a bowl of cherries. And he developed into the Buddha, meditate to get satori, nirvana, free from samsara, get out of this. That's the whole idea. So that's, you know, that's work. That's work. We got to struggle to get, you know, to take our material desires. We got to become free of all those material desires and you know, get absorbed in the Supreme, so we won't come back. You know, so that's the kind of the negative view of the goal. But in Krishna consciousness, we find that by focusing our attention on Krishna, the personality of Krishna, with the beautiful, all-attractive personality of Krishna, his activities, his deity, his devotees, his festivals, his holy name, everything about Krishna is attractive. That aspect of our mission is taken care of automatically. So on a personal level, this is all auspicious and easy and happily performed. But there is a greater aspect to the mission, the social aspect. Because if we really want to get close to Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and their followers, then we have to soften the heart. The heart becomes soft and sensitive, and you paradukha dukhi, which means that you become sympathetic and empathetic to the suffering of others. We become here it says, atma tripta samanava, atma rati eva sat. So we're taking all this pleasure. But what about all the other souls, our brothers and sisters? They're also children of God. They're suffering in illusion, thinking they're the body, and they have no clue about this. So that's the other part of the mission. And that for that, there is all kinds of realms of sacrifice and austerity to perform. But even that, we find, becomes a great pleasure. Because, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, that trouble that I take in your service is my greatest pleasure. And we see that the greatest devotees are those who sacrifice their own comfort, you know, for the service of the Lord. And it's always for the service of giving Krishna to others. And they become most dear to Krishna, as he explains in the 18th chapter. So there's these two tracks. One is our own personal advancement, which we cannot neglect. And the other is to try to help others become advanced. And that's why these temples are maintained. That's why we're sitting here in San Diego instead of, you know, all of us running to Mayapur and Vrindavan and just sitting there. This is the example of our line, of our acharyas. They took the trouble to go to the difficult places where Krishna consciousness is not known, bhakti yoga is not known, and to try to give it to others. So this is a nice explanation here. What is duty? Duty we should accept on behalf of Krishna. But we should know that in the end, it won't be a duty, it'll be a pleasure. As we were reading this morning by the breakfast, remember that? Bhajaniya padama purusha sukha matra chasukatvam. This is a phrase from the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. And it kind of encapsulates the essence of how one can reach the platform of constant happiness. Sthayi bhava. So bhajaniya means the one who's worshipable. That's Krishna. Padama purusha, the supreme person. Sukha matra, simply his happiness. Swasukatvam. That when one takes one's own happiness solely and wholly in the happiness of the supreme person who is worshipable, then that's Krishna consciousness. That's pure love. Like a mother, she's happy when the child is happy. She may have so many difficulties of her own, but if the child is happy and healthy, then the mother is really happy. The mother may sacrifice her life to save the child. Why? Because she identifies with the interest of the child. So that's the purest thing, that's the closest thing we have to the pure kind of selfless love that one is meant to develop, or let us say, revive, toward Krishna. And he reciprocates more than any other person could possibly reciprocate, giving us this state, which is just hinted at here. Atma ratir, atma triptas, atmani eva santushta. Complete satisfaction, happiness, and satiety. In the service of Krishna. So that's what this verse is all about. If anyone has any discussion on this, sacrifice or anything, otherwise we can move forward. Okay, now this is again describing this person who's atma rati or atma triptas. Naivatasya kritenarto. I know we can do it. The next verse, text 18. Naivatasya kritenarto. Nakriteneha kashkashjana Nachasya sarvabhuteshu Kashchid artha vyapashriyaha. The self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. Purport, a self-realized man is no longer obliged to perform any prescribed duty, save and except activities in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not inactivity either, as will be explained in the following verses. A Krishna conscious man does not take shelter of any person, man or demigod. Whatever he does in Krishna consciousness is sufficient in the discharge of his obligation. So this is a symptom of perfect faith. The faith is defined, as we explained previously, Shraddha Shabde Vishras Kohe Sudridha Nishchoy Krishne Bhakti Koile Sarva Karma Kutahoy. So Sarva Karma Kutahoy. We're talking about karma. This is Karma Yoga chapter. So he says, faith is defined as being fully confident and fully convinced that just by one's activities in Bhakti Yoga, in Krishna consciousness, all one's desires will be fulfilled. All one's duties are performed. This is full faith. And indeed, Krishna consciousness is a complete lifestyle. We all know, those who are living in the temple, that one can live. Every moment there's some duty to perform in Krishna consciousness. Even there's a time to take rest, work to be done, time to eat, so forth, there's shelters, everything. So one's life can be centered on Krishna. One can actually live that way. And if one is fully satisfied in that life, working for Krishna, developing with Krishna consciousness, then that's a sign of deep faith that this is the right path and you'll take it to the ultimate goal of life. So that's what's being mentioned here. He has no purpose, none of his own purpose to fulfill in discharge of his prescribed duties, nor is he any reason not to perform such work. So all of the impetus and the need for work or not work is coming from Krishna. So personally, we have we try as hard as we can to fulfill some mission. If it doesn't work, what can you do? But if it's on your own account, I made some investment here, and I'm trying my best to make it work. If it doesn't work, it's another disaster. You're completely egotistically involved, you see? But if we try simply to serve Krishna to the best of our abilities, and for some reason it doesn't work out, then try again tomorrow. The thing is, the effort itself is a success. That's not true in material things. The effort itself is a success. Just like we offer fruits to Krishna, you know, every 4:15 or whatever it is, right? 4 o'clock. So the fruits are not the greatest fruits, you know, the best ones we can get. You know, what does Krishna need of our, you know, half-ripe peaches that we offer, or whatever, you know, or maybe ripe mangoes? But he has a million perfectly ripe mangoes in the spiritual world. So he's not interested in that fruit. He's not interested in whatever we can do here. He's interested in our heart, the mood with which we do it. So it's when we pray to Krishna for something, it's for our benefit, you know. In other words, and when we offer something, it's for our benefit. So we don't have any mission other than, you know, Krishna's pleasure to offer or to serve. But doing that in that mood is to our greatest benefit. This is a kind of a paradox in Krishna consciousness. All right, going on. Therefore, tasmad asakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakto yacharam karma paramapnoti purushah. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty, for by working without attachment, one attains the Supreme. Purport. The Supreme is the personality of Godhead for the devotees and liberation for the impersonalist. A person, therefore, acting for Krishna or in Krishna consciousness, under proper guidance and without attachment to the result of the work, is certainly making progress toward the supreme goal of life. Arjuna is told that he should fight in the battle of Kurukshetra for the interest of Krishna, because Krishna wanted him to fight. To be a good man or a non-violent man is a personal attachment, but to act on behalf of the Supreme is to act without attachment for the result. That is perfect action of the highest degree, recommended by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Vedic rituals, like prescribed sacrifices, are performed for purification of impious activities that were performed in the field of sense gratification. But action in Krishna consciousness is transcendental to the reactions of good or evil work. A Krishna conscious person has no attachment for the result, but acts on behalf of Krishna alone. He engages in all kinds of activities, but is completely non-attached. So this idea of attachment, we're coming back to this. Asaktaha. Asakta means without attachment. Now, the definition of yukta vairagya, we try to come to this platform of vairagya. Raga, in this context, means material attachment. It's related to kama, or lust. But we're full of all kinds of material attachments, subtle and gross in this world. And those attachments, which reside in the mind, and also in the senses, intelligence, they keep us bound to this world. We're here in this material body because of previous attachments that we developed that we couldn't fulfill in the previous life. You can never fulfill them all on the material plane because they're always flowing in, and your facility to fulfill the desires are limited by your senses, by circumstances. So eventually the body, the vehicle for your satisfaction and work in this world, wears down. You have to leave it. And you leave it by within the realm, if you will, or with the subtle body. We actually have two bodies, just like we have in the cold weather, you have a coat and you have a shirt, you know, and you have undergarments. So similarly, we have the gross body, which we all know about, it's obvious, the senses, and you have the subtle body of the mind, intelligence, ego. Now, when the gross body dies, the subtle body doesn't. And it's that subtle body which we've cultivated all our lives with our impressions, our desires, our activities, which then forms the template for the next gross body. It's already there by the higher authority. Karmana daiva netrena jantu dehopapatiye. Daiva netrena means supervision of the daiva, of the divine, of the gods and the supreme god, Krishna. So by our karma, by our activities, which creates all this impression and reactions, good or bad, or pious or sinful. So in that's big mix, it's very complicated, and we go next to the next body. And then we begin developing new attachments. Right? So it's always this attachment that we have that is keeping us bound here. So one of the main focuses of the Bhagavad Gita or any Vedic path is to weaken or break these attachments. They're called, sometimes they're called riddhiya granti, knots in the heart, knots in the consciousness that keep us bound here. So what to do? So here Krishna says, tasma asatta satatam karyam karma saracha, perform your duty without attachment. So how can you do that? The only way to do that practically is to do it for Krishna. In other words, that's the whole point of this chapter, is that as much as possible we should work but not be attached to the fruits. Give the fruits over to higher, you know, give it to the gods or give it best to Krishna. Right? Give it to Krishna. Yagyartar kamano nyatra loko yam kama bandana. This is like a key verse of this chapter, text 9. Yagyartar kamano anyatra. One has to work for the sake of sacrifice. Now another meaning of yagya is Vishnu. Otherwise, loko yam kama bandana, that work binds you to this world. Because it simply plants a desire in your mind. You work hard to get the money to buy something you want. So you're attached to the money and you're attached to what you want to buy with the money. And suppose you buy it. Now the attachment deepens. You're attached to the house. You're attached to the car. You're attached to the prestige having the money gives you. All of these different things. But if you can at least partially work for the sake of Vishnu, okay, I earned so much money, I give 10%, 20%, 50% ideally, to the Hundi, to Krishna, it's not mine anymore. It's for you, Krishna. Then that work that you did no longer has any karmic fruit. That's liberating. That's what Krishna says. Yagyartar kamano niyota loko yam kamabandhanaha. So then he says, tadartam kamakontaya mukta sangha samachada. So you become free from sangha. Sangha and asakta, they're related. Sangha is the attachment. Asakta is being attached, or the quality of being attached. Or detached in that case. So how to attain this detachment, or vairagya? There's raga and vairagya, detachment. So that's the science of bhakti. And there's this something called yukta vairagya, detachment in yoga. So Lord Rupa Goswami has in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, This definition. Anasaktasya vishayan yataham upayunjita nirbandha krishna sambandha yuktam vairagyam uchyate. So anasaktasya, without attachment to the vishayas, the objects of the sense, anasakta vishayan yataham upayunjita nirbandha, as appropriate, using them in the service of Krishna. So nirbandha, one is no longer bound. It's the same in English as Sanskrit. Nirbandha. You don't become bound to those objects of the senses, but you become bound to Krishna in affection. That's the whole point. Nirbandha, Krishna sambandha, yuktam vairagyam uchyate. This is the whole art of bhakti yoga. What to do with these senses? What to do with all this matter around? What to do with this money? What to do with our intelligence? These are all there as facilities. They can be used for self-gratification. But as soon as we do that, we become bound up, birth and death. So the trick is how to use the sound. Sound is such an important thing. Sound can bind us, sound can liberate us. Transcendental sound, such as Hare Krishna mantra, primarily, liberates the mind. Why? Because Krishna has invested the sound with his energies. Nijasarva shaktis tatrapita, says Lord Chaitanya. Nijasarva shakti. So by chanting the name of Krishna with attention, we're becoming attracted to Krishna and correspondingly unattracted, detached from matter. We experience it every day. The more that we chant, the more that we associate with that sound, even if we're not chanting purely, still we're progressing. The more we feel enlivened in Krishna consciousness, because we're contacting the internal energy of Krishna and we're becoming attracted to Krishna, to God, in this sound form. So, practically speaking, the more of our duties we can perform. Here in the 19th, he's coming back from the two verses. Arjun, you know, is taking the role of the conditioned soul. So he's not... Arjun is not atma-drottir, atma-triptas. He's not satisfied in the self. You know, as a conditioned soul, although he's not ultimately conditioned, but he's taking that role. So therefore, you have to perform the duty, you know, selflessly. And in this way, you'll become less and less attached to the fruit and more attached to Krishna. Asakto, it becomes yachadan karma, paramapnoti purusha. If you act in that way, then ultimately you will attain the Supreme Person, paramapnoti purusha. So this is very practical for us as devotees, is that the more that we can perform action in this consciousness as a sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure, and the more that we can think of Krishna, the less it'll feel like a sacrifice, the more it'll feel like pleasure. The more we'll break these bonds of the material attachments. And this brings us back again to our Sadhu Sangashtaka. You know, it's all about Sangha. And Sangha also means attachment. And here's Asakta, the same root word is there. That by associating with devotees and by hearing the transcendental sound, then one quickly develops the faith to work in Krishna consciousness, and that develops more and more into the rati, that was one of the words in the previous verses, and into bhakti, real bhakti. This is actual, you know, bhakti means, ultimately bhakti has to be rendered toward the Supreme Personality of God. It cannot be rendered toward any of the gods, you know, because they're part and parcel of Krishna, and none of them have the all-attractive nature of Krishna or the ability to reciprocate fully in any to anyone who approaches in any rasa. So that's what, you know, real bhakti means Krishna bhakti. That's what it really means. So what to do, how to work in this world. It's a very practical instruction here. Try to work selflessly. Try to work as a matter of duty as far as possible for the benefit of the Supreme. And ultimately one will attain the Supreme goal. That's what this verse says. Any questions on this verse? Okay, so now he's going to give some examples of those who did this and achieved perfection. Or he gives at least one example. Karmanaiva hi sangsiddhim.
Karmanaiva hi sangsiddhim.
Astita janakariya.
Astita janakariya.
Lokasangham evapi.
Lokasangham evapi.
Sampashyan kartamarhasi.
Sampashyan kartamarhasi.
Kings such as Janaka attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Purport. Kings like Janaka were all self-realized souls. Consequently, they had no obligation to perform the prescribed duties in the Vedas. Nonetheless, they performed all prescribed activities just to set examples for the people in general. Janaka was the father of Sita and father-in-law of Lord Sri Ram. Being a great devotee of the Lord, he was transcendentally situated, but because he was the king of Mithila, a subdivision of Bihar province in India, he had to teach his subjects how to perform prescribed duties. Lord Krishna and Arjun, the Lord's eternal friend, had no need to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, but they fought to teach people in general that violence is also necessary in a situation where good arguments fail. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, every effort was made to avoid the war, even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the other party was determined to fight. So for such a right cause, there is a necessity for fighting. Although one who is situated in Krishna consciousness may not have any interest in the world, he still works to teach the public how to live and how to act. Experienced persons in Krishna consciousness can act in such a way that others will follow. And this is explained in the following verse. So this is a very important principle. The good example principle. As Krishna will explain in the next verse, that if you're in some kind of leadership position, then what you do will be followed by others in subordinates. So you may be the most realized person in the world, you know, and not need to even chant. You're always chanting in your mind or whatever, you know. But if you're really compassionate, you'll do all those things, you know, in order to be a good example. And Krishna gives the argument. Now what he'll say, because one of Arjun's arguments was that if he fights in the battle, then all these men will be killed, the women will be unprotected, their wives, and then they'll become fallen women, children will be born who are not properly trained. So Arjun will be the cause of degradation in society. This was his argument. But Krishna is going to say exactly the opposite. about himself, that he certainly, Krishna doesn't need to perform any kind of activity. But when he's on the earth, he does all kinds of activities as a matter of duty. He drove Arjun's chariot. He took orders from Arjun, you know. And when he was living in Dwarka, he went to the assembly hall and discussed, you know, as part of the whole leadership council, you know. He was performing those duties. And in his household life, getting his children married, you know, all this business, you know. Why? Because everyone's following him. So he's saying, if I didn't do that, then there would be chaos in society. Now, some people take it the wrong way. They said, oh, in his youth, he danced with all the gopis. That's also an example. No, that's not an example that we should follow. That's a special thing. You have to be intelligent enough to know that this is a verse in the Bhagavatam. The activities of great souls serve as examples when they comport with their teachings. Thanks for coming by. Hare Krishna. But when they do some special activity, like the example is given Shiva, Lord Shiva. You know, Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison once. When they started churning the ocean of milk to get nectar, well, the first thing that came out was this horrible poison. It was going to go all over the world. So Shiva, out of compassion, he drank all that poison. You know, saved the world. And the only difference is his throat turned a little blue. You know, so he's known as Nilakanta. And Nilakanta is a name for Shiva. It means blue throat. So we're certainly not going to imitate that. You know, that's not an activity that's exemplary that we can do. But some people think, oh, well, Shiva, he likes to smoke ganja too, for whatever reason. You know, oh, that we can do. We can do because Shiva does it. Can you also drink an ocean of poison? No, that we don't do. You see? So in other words, we have to be intelligent enough, and that's why we need acharyas and teachers, what activity of the powerful persons we follow and what we simply worship and contemplate as their lila. So Krishna gives so many teachings. He's also teaching, even in the Bhagavatam, he's also teaching chastity. He even tells the gopis when they come out, this is not good. Adultery never leads to higher planets. You know, you go back and serve your husbands and children. He tells them that when they first come out. He's kind of testing them, you know. Of course, they're very upset about that because they've already broken all those ties, you know. But it's a whole lila thing. But it's mentioned there. That's good advice. It's not that because the gopis went out to meet their lover that all the women go out to meet their lovers. That's abominable. That what's highest in the spiritual realm is lowest in the material realm. The highest thing is the gopis and Krishna. Their pure love for Krishna. They're so in love with Krishna that they're willing to break all of the Vedic rules and run out, you know, which is unheard of in the Vedic culture. You know, that shows a sign for their love for Krishna. Because it's Krishna and not any ordinary man, therefore it's exalted and completely pure. It's inconceivable how it works, but that's the truth. So anyway, back to our chapter 3 here. Great kings like Janaka, they were perfect. They were already perfect, but they showed how one can live perfectly in this world by performing the duties according to one's station, selflessly, and ultimately for the pleasure of the Supreme Person. Okay. And then, any questions on this? All right. Next verse is one of these memorable verses. You can check it off. Yadyadacharati shreshtas tatta deve taro janaha sayat pamanam kurute lokastaranavartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Purport. People in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. A leader cannot teach the public to stop smoking if he himself smokes. Lord Chaitanya said that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. One who teaches in that way is called acharya, or the ideal teacher. Therefore, a teacher must follow the principles of shastra or scripture to teach the common man. The teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures. The revealed scriptures, like Manu Samhita and similar others, are considered the standard books to be followed by human society. Thus, the leader's teaching should be based on the principles of such standard shastras. One who desires to improve himself must follow the standard rules as they are practiced by the great teachers. The Srimad Bhagavatam also affirms that one should follow in the footsteps of great devotees, and that is the way of progress on the path of spiritual realization. The king or the executive head of a state, the father and the school teacher, are all considered to be natural leaders of the innocent people in general. All such natural leaders have a great responsibility to other dependents. Therefore, they must be conversant with standard books of moral and spiritual codes. So there's a verse by Lord Rishabhdev teaches, Guru Nasatsat, Swajano Nasatsat, Pina Nasatsat, Janani Nasatsat, Daivan Natatsyad, Napatishtya Sasan, Namochye Jek Samopeta Mrityum. That one should not become a guru, one should not become a relative, one should, a father, a mother, husband, or a deva, if one cannot liberate one's dependents. This is a very great responsibility in society. The role of teacher. The guru actually means teacher. So what does a teacher do? He passes on. Is that to pass on received wisdom and also realized wisdom? That, you know. So without, remember the definition of the word acharya. The word acharya comes from the word achara, which means behavior. So acharya is one who has to know first the, as Prabhupada says, the standard books of moral and spiritual codes, the revealed shastra, and act according to them and be willing to impart them. That's acharya. Very important that there be such. That first of all, the books have to be existent. They have to be available. That was Prabhupada's great gift, to make these books available and in their proper form so that we can understand. Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhakti Samhita Sindhu. And now so many others are manifesting also, following in the Vedic. So the books are available. But just the books on the shelf are not helping us. We need to have persons who are following the books, realizing the books, and be willing to teach on that basis. So therefore we should really respect those who are in that role. You know, great acharyas who are traveling around the world. So that, you know, it all depends on this acharati, which is as you act. This is all karma yoga, activity. It all, you know, is revealed by the actual activity and character of the person. That's why, you know, there's so many bogus yogis around and so forth. It all comes out in the wash. You know, what are they really teaching and what are they really doing and what's, you know. If they're not devotees of Krishna, then they're not getting the higher taste. And ultimately, the motive has to be perverted. You may teach so many principles, but if you're, you're weak in your moral, you're drinking, smoking, you know, illicit sex, if that's going on, then it's useless, worse than useless, much worse than useless. It's better to not be any teacher than have that kind of teachers. So that's the whole reason for the society, to somehow develop a culture that to train people to be acharyas in this world. You know, so that we can help the vast masses who are without any guidance. Any guidance. Any final questions, discussions? Yes, Michael.
Where he says, the revealed scriptures like the Manu Samhitas and similar others.
Uh-huh.
How come we don't, the Sampradaya Yurian,
you don't generally teach the Manu Samhita. Yeah, the Manu Samhita is an important work, but we should know the history of the literature, that ultimately the Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of all the Vedic literatures. And many of the rules and the strictures of the Manu Samhita we could not follow. It would be impossible. But just as we were discussing earlier, as Krishna said earlier, if one is Krishna conscious, then everything else is taken care of. Whatever austerities are needed, whatever character development is needed, all of that is taken care of if we follow Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So for this age, Manusamhita, we can you know look into it, but we should know that for this Kali Yuga, the more important books of knowledge are the ones that Srila Prabhupada gave us. There's nothing that we're going to lack if we follow the principles given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And Manusamhita is important. It's a law book for mankind. But in this particular Kali Yuga, at this age, more important are these other literatures. I mean, that was the whole thing with Veda Vyas. He had written all these other books, but he wasn't satisfied till he gave us the Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore it says, right at the beginning of Bhagavatam, Dharmak Projita Kaita Vota Padamoni Matsaranam Santam Vedyam Vastava Matra Vastra Shiva Dum Tapatre Unmulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamanukuti King Vaparayar. It said this Srimad Bhagavatam was written by Vyasadeva in his maturity. A King Vaparayar means what's the need for any other Shastra? Because by simply listening and hearing this Bhagavatam in the proper mood of service, called Shushushava, the Lord will become revealed in the heart. And all auspiciousness will be there. Tapatrayon mulanam, threefold miseries uprooted. So let's become students of Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Take care of everything. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.